Chapter 6. Arya gets off the bus at Wintertown the next day, with a chill in her lungs and a song in her heart, as she bids the team goodbye and heads home. They'll be there for 3 days, longer than usual, but Winterfell has got only one field and their baseball team is hosting invitationals. And because she lives in Winterfell, Sirio's given her special permission to stay home. 3 days where she can sleep in her own bed, play with Nymeria, watch movies with her parents, curl up around Bran and tell him everything she could think of, because it was always easier, somehow, seeing people. You could actually talk about things and not just send them updates. It was one of the strange things about school. She hadn't been close to Sansa growing up, not even a little, but just the fact of having Sansa there and dating her friend made everything that much harder, that much more complicated. She couldn't just ignore her sister, and sometimes it was all she wanted to do. Ignoring Sansa, retreating into softball where her sister wouldn't follow, that had gotten Arya through far more than she liked to admit. It's that Sansa, the one who made her feel like she was scrabbling for recognition, trying to force her way into family moments where she should have felt welcome, who always lied and got Arya into trouble, that permeates Winterfell with her snotty raised eyebrows and her delicate condescending laugh. But that Sansa is a memory now, or so it feels sometimes when Arya sees her at Harrenhal. The sister she sees most days is different than the one who made fun of her for running around in Jon's two big baseball jerseys. The girl who'd always told her that she had hat hair and smelled funny, and should consider using deodorant next time she played. The Sansa she sees now is, what, more broken? That hardly seemed a fair thing to say. Older? More aware? Guiltier? Whatever it is, it's not the same. And that almost makes it harder, because separating the two almost feels impossible. And yet, how could she not? She thinks of Sansa drunk and saying, "I was awful to you growing up, and I'm sorry." Did it count when you were drunk? She knows there are two schools of thought on the matter. The one that says it doesn't count if you're drunk, and the one that says that drunken confessions are the most honest and profound of all of them. Which one is it? And does that even apply to sibling relationships? Or is it just relationship relationships? Bran'll know. Bran knows everything. Jon might know too, if he actually comes south the way they've been trying to get him to. She wonders what her soulmate would say. She wonders if she should bring it up at all. Her sister not being nice to her growing up hardly seems the sort of thing that even remotely compares to not being wanted by your own mother. And besides, it's... she doesn't know. There's something about it. Like, she feels she can't tell it or something. Like, it's not how they are. But shouldn't they be that way? Shouldn't she feel as though she can always be perfectly open and honest? Why does she feel as though she's hiding parts of herself from him? As though she's protecting herself the way she did when she was 11 and had learned that sometimes, if you don't cross Sansa, she wouldn't be as spiteful and make fun of how your arms are all muscled like a boy's from playing softball too much. She hears Nymeria first when she rings the doorbell, scratching at the door and whining. And a moment later, it's swinging open, and there's her mother, looking like death, but smiling so warmly as she hugs Arya. "Hello, my baby," she whispers into Arya's hair. She almost hadn't realized she missed her mother, but holding her there, feeling her warmth as Nymeria raises herself onto her hind paws and tries to lick Arya's face. "Hi, Mama." And she's home. She's really home, even if it's only for the weekend. When she releases her mother, she turns to Nymeria, crouching down and letting the dog lick her face and make delighted little yipping noises. "I've been making your favorite for dinner," her mother smiles down at her, "and your father is on his way home from work, and Bran should be back soon." "Rickon?" Arya asks. He's finishing his math homework. And Arya grins. Turning into a mathematician, is he? No. And Arya laughs. She climbs the stairs two at a time, Nymeria right behind her, and pokes her head into Rickon's room. He's asleep on the bed, his auburn hair a tangled mess, and she laughs and mutters, "Math homework," to herself, before going and throwing herself onto her bed, Nymeria leaping up and joining her while she drifts into a dreamless sleep. She comes downstairs, yawning, to find John sitting on the couch with a cup of tea, and Bran telling him some sort of story. And it's weird, all right? Like, trees don't... Arya! She grins, and John gets up and gives her a hug, mussing her hair, and Bran wheels his chair over to her so that she can give him a hug next. The problem is that John doesn't let her go. "No," he says when she squirms away. "But Bran," she whines, sounding like Nymeria, who has followed her downstairs and is trying to get a hug as well. "No," John repeats. "Meanie," Bran huffs, and John laughs and loosens his grip, only slightly, so that Arya, still in his arms, can twist around and give Bran a half hug. "I'll give you a better one later," she says. Bran grins up at her. "You'd better. I promise." "Okay." She sits down on the couch with John, tucking her legs up against her chest and leaning against him, while Nymeria sits on the floor, wagging her tail expectantly. Mom had really done a good job with her once Arya was gone, keeping her off the furniture. "What was it you were saying about trees?" Arya asks Bran, and he rolls his eyes. "It's not even a thing," he says. "Oh, really? It was a dream, all right. I dreamed that the trees were talking to me, and then Jojen showed up and he couldn't hear them. It was just strange." "I wonder what your subconscious was telling you," Arya grins. "Don't dreams reflect the subconscious or something?" Her stomach twists, because if that's true, then clearly her subconscious is telling her something she doesn't want to admit about Gendry. "That I'm a god, obviously," deadpans Bran. "The very roots of the world speak to me and tell me their secrets. What else could it mean?"
"If I had to pick a god, it would probably be you,"
John teases, lifting his tea to his lips. "Ow. Hot?"
"Yeah."
"Be careful, you'll burn yourself."
"Boil myself, more like. I'm not actually on fire,"
John mutters, putting his tea back down.
"Well, when I'm a god, I'll smile kindly upon you," says Bran in mock austerity. "You I shall protect from the flames that would burn you and the water that would boil you like a lobster, and..."
"What about me?" Arya asks. "How will you protect me?" Bran draws one corner of his lip into the center of his mouth, considering.
"I don't know yet. I'll get back to you."
Arya pressed a hand to her heart and put on an expression of mock outrage. "I'm insulted. You haven't thought about how you'll protect me from the world when you're a god?"
"What matters is that I do it, not that I have it planned. I mean, look at John. He's just asking to get shanked or something."
"I am not," John sputters, affronted.
"Are you questioning me, the all-knowing god?"
Bran asks, sitting up a little straighter in his chair.
"I just want a second opinion is all," John grumbles,
and Arya grins and snuggles into him. He's much thinner than Gendry is, and she's used to snuggling into Gendry on trains, on buses, while watching Dragons games in the student union. But John is familiar, and John is home, and she's so glad he came south for the weekend, because Winterfell isn't Winterfell without John.
"Your game is at 10 tomorrow morning?"
Dad asks, as he takes a plate of chocolate cookies from Rickon and takes three.
"Ned, three?"
Mom asks, half exasperated, half amused.
"We all know I'm going to have them anyway," he says lightly, passing the plate to John, who only takes one.
No wonder the children have your sweet tooth, she sighs.
Yeah, 10, Arya cuts in. I need to be there by 8:30 to warm up properly, though.
Well, Dad checks his watch. It's 8:30 now, so off to bed with you, Missy. 12 hours of rest should do it, shouldn't it?
Arya rolls her eyes, and he smiles. And the game is at 7?
Yes, we'll want to be there by 6:45, since no one gives a shit about the dragons, Bren says.
Please be sure to repeat that to Gendry as often as possible, so that he gets the hint and starts liking a real team, Arya says. That's what you can do with your god powers. Make Gendry like the wolves.
God powers? Asks Dad, confused. Has Bran got god powers?
Yes, says Bran seriously. I do.
I didn't know I'd given birth to a god, Mom says benignly, lifting a cookie to her lips. Is that why you were so difficult? 20 hours of labor and a cord wrapped around your neck?
Probably, Bran says cheerfully. We gods are hard to give birth to. How does it make you feel, being the mother of a god?
Mom munches her cookie, swallows, and says,
Well, I feel like most mothers only want what's best for their children. Perhaps mothering multimillionaires or kings. I, clearly, aspire to more.
There's time yet for Rob to become a king, John says quietly. If he has his way, he might just manage. Over my dead body, Dad says. Rob should know better than to go into politics.
You try telling him that, Mom sighs. He does seem to be headed that way.
Dad rolls his eyes and turns to Arya. Can I at least rely on you to become a professional ball player and get me free season's tickets? I think it's only fair, given how much money I've shelled out on tickets for you.
I'll see what I can do, she grins. At the very least, if Gendry gets recruited, I can make him give you free ones.
This Gendry, Mom begins, and her stomach sinks.
Don't look at me that way. I'm just curious. He's a friend of yours from school?
Yes, Arya says stiffly. A friend. John coughs, and she kicks him under the table. Bran, at least, has the good sense not to say a word. And how did you meet this friend? Dad asks.
He's on the baseball team. We play catch and talk about life, Arya says.
I like him already, says Dad. He breaks his cookie in half and pops it into his mouth. I approve. Well chosen.
Ned, they're friends, says Mom. Don't say things like that.
John coughs again, and the corner of Bran's lips twitch, and Arya glares at both of them.
What?
Rickon asks, looking between his siblings.
Nothing, Rickon, Bran says benignly.
It's not nothing. You were all making faces. Rickon's frowning between the three of them. That's not fair. What's going on? Then John bursts out laughing, and Arya glares at him because he's such a traitor, and sees Mom looking between him and her and connecting the dots because her mother's mouth forms a silent, oh, and she pushes her seat away from the table and begins collecting plates.
Arya, will you help me clear the table?
She does, if only to get away from Rickon's continued,
come on, tell me's.
And when she and her mother are in the kitchen loading the dishwasher, Mom says,
I hope you're using protection.
What? No, I mean, it's not like that, Mom.
It's not.
Her mother's up to her elbows in her yellow cleaning gloves as she scrubs the pan she used to cook the chicken.
What is it, then?
Arya looks at the kitchen door, hoping that Rickon, or worse, Dad, won't come in.
It's just dreams, all right? I've been having some dreams about him.
Dreams? Her mother asks slowly.
Not that kind of dream, Arya says quickly.
Gods, but it would be easy if it were. But Gendry had his soulmate, his distant, nice soulmate, and dreams with her and everything. The other kind of dream. Her mother opens her mouth and raises her eyebrows, then decides she's not going to say a thing and closes it again. Well, she's scrambling to find something else to say. Arya can see it. Well, no harm can come of that. No, Arya agrees firmly. No harm can come of it. She goes to Bran's room after she finishes cleaning and finds him sitting on his bed with Jojen, who is showing him photos on his phone. That's from White Tree. Should there be bumps like that? Bran asks, pointing. I think it's tree cancer. Natural, so... Should be? Ideally, no. Abnormal? Not quite. Okay. I'll show you tonight, when we're sleeping, Jojen says, and Bran grins up at him. Can I climb it? Arya's heart jerks for a moment, and she realizes, horribly, that Bran must be able to walk in their dreams. Jojen is the only one who sees him walk anymore. Walk and climb and run and dance, and everything Bran had done before his accident, and that he'll never do again. She bites her lip, considering leaving them alone for a moment. Then she realizes she's being stupid and clears her throat. Am I interrupting? They look up as one, with matching expressions on their faces of happy welcome. Plenty of room, says Bran, patting the bed on his other side. And she goes and sits next to him. Nymeria follows her and looks at Bran, as if asking for permission to jump up before she does. Did she just ask for permission? Arya asks, amused. She and Summer can get into it a bit over my bed. I feel like there's some off-color joke to be made about bitches and your bed, says Jojen. That said, I shall not make it, but rather leave it to be inferred. Bran elbows him. Thanks for spelling that out for us, Arya says dryly. Anytime. Here you are, Jon says, poking his nose around the door. He cocks his head and stares at Jojen for a moment. When did you get here? 20 minutes ago, maybe? Huh. Jon comes over and doesn't ask if there's room, but flops on the bed. With both of them in one room, Arya leaps into action. If either of you tell Rickon I'm cutting ties, I swear I am. Jon laughs and Bran cracks a grin. Tell Rickon what? Jojen asks. Arya's having sex dreams about her best friend, says Bran. Jojen blinks, wiggles his head from side to side, then says, Nice. Good sex? Very, Arya replies. Actually, I won't cut ties. I'll just give you both excruciating details. I won't tell Rickon, Bran and Jon say at the exact same time, and it's Arya's turn to laugh, though it's more in relief than amusement. What does your soulmate think of this? Jojen asks quietly, and Bran turns to look at him. Some people find Bran hard to read, because he's so measured when he watches people. But Arya's known him his whole life, and she sees the way he sucks his lips almost imperceptibly between his teeth when he's nervous, the same way he looks down before he lies. He says he's all right with it, Arya says slowly. I mean, he's never seemed angry about it or jealous, but I don't know. I still feel bad. I feel almost like I'm cheating on him. Jojen looks down at his hands and takes one of Bran's in his and says, Well, as long as you're honest with him, I suppose it's okay. I guess you have a more platonic relationship? Yeah, we mostly play baseball, Arya says. She's still watching Bran, whose eyes have dropped to Jojen's hand in his. Well, that's good then, Jojen says. Yeah, Arya says. Communication with your soulmate is important, Jon agrees. It gets messy fast if you don't. Yeah, I know. Just look at Sans... Hey, neither of you have Sandor Clegane's phone number, do you? She'd forgotten until that moment, but they were both there. Jon lifts his head and looks at her confused. Bran pulls out his phone and begins scrolling through contacts. Ned wants it. He wants to talk to him. Bran looks up. Why? She wishes he didn't sound so nervous. Sansa's having trouble handling both of them, and I think Ned's worried about it and wants to try to work it out with him.
Sandor'll love that, John says dryly.
Yeah, it's here. I'll text it to you, says Bran. Thanks. Her phone buzzes and she texts the number to Ned with a note and then settles down next to Bran again. Arya takes longer than she should, maybe, sending Ned the contact information. And her hands are trembling slightly, because she knows she should ask them. They're both here, but so is Jojen, and she doesn't know Jojen, even if Jojen is Bran's soulmate. I don't think Sansa's all right, Arya whispers. I think she's pretending, and pretending really well. But I don't think she's all right at all. I think this thing with them is screwing her up. She rolls her eyes at herself. More, I mean, than the level of usual human screwed upness. Bran's lips twitch in a frown, and John twists to watch Arya, but doesn't say anything. Yeah, I've gotten that vibe, Bran says. She sends me emails sometimes when she wakes up, and yeah, I'm worried. She's always been bad at taking care of herself. She was drunk in my room last week, Arya says, not looking up at either of them. Drunk and apologizing, saying she had been awful to me growing up. Well, she sort of was, John says sharply, and Arya raises her eyebrows at him. I know that, thank you, she says coolly, having lived through it and everything. John raises his hands defensively, as if to say, just saying, as he lies back down and stares at the ceiling. Brent says, He's frowning, and Jojen is watching him intently, as if drinking him in. No, not as if drinking him in, as if Bran were a pop fly and Jojen was ready to catch him if he fell. Arya suddenly wishes she hadn't brought it up at all and feels hot shame burning in her. Bran, of all of them, has had the easiest relationship with everyone. Even Rob, who gets off on feeling like he was the eldest. Talking about this sort of thing, it hurts him, she knows. It's hard talking about the flaws in someone you don't experience, but someone else does acutely. Yeah. Arya says, in an attempt to close the hurt. She'll push a lot of things to a confrontation, but Bran sitting there looking sad because of something she brought up is a little more than she can bear. I know she feels guilty about it, Bran cuts in. I know she feels bad. It took her a while to be aware of it. I think this whole thing with Ned and Sandor, she's gone into therapy, yeah? And they talk about things she's pushed down and hidden from herself and kept at a distance. And part of that's you. And she doesn't know how to handle that. Like, that's pretty crushing to her, I think. He looks sad as he says it. Gods, I shouldn't be saying this, he mutters. It's not mine to tell. He turns away from Arya and rests his forehead into Jojen's shoulder. And Jojen reaches up and rubs Bran's head. Crushing? Arya asks quietly. She doesn't expect him to answer, and he doesn't. And she looks over at John, who's still frowning. Sansa's a good person, John says quietly. And sometimes good people learn about the shit they've pulled, and it hurts a lot. So she'll carry it as a weight for the rest of her life. Or she won't. I don't know. I'm not her. But all the same, I don't imagine for a second it feels good, realizing how she used to treat you, pushing you around, pushing you out, making you feel like you don't belong in places where you do, realizing the effect that had. The effect that had? Arya rolls her eyes. I'm fine, John. Oh yeah? John says, and when he opens his eyes, she sees her own stubbornness mirrored in them. Why can't you see your soulmate's face, then? What? Arya demands, suddenly defensive. What's that got to do with anything? John casts a glance at Bran, who looks so forlorn that Arya is almost scared of whatever it is that he's thinking. His hand is in Jojen's and his knuckles are white. He's gripping his soulmate's hand so hard. Let's try it this way, John says, and his voice sounds different now. Emptier. Sansa spent a huge part of your youth making you feel like you didn't belong, right? Belong here. He gestures around the house. Like you didn't fit in with the way the family should be, right?
I wouldn't, Arya begins.
I would, John says. She stopped, somewhere along the line, but she did the damage, right? And there's a reason that there's so much study of dream psych, right? Because sometimes people's psychology plays into it. You're great at making friends, at pushing out and finding new people to bring to you. It's one of the best things about you. He reaches over and musses her hair, as if hoping the gesture will make whatever he's about to say sting less. But you didn't feel safe in a space that should have kept you safe. You didn't feel ever like you could thrive here. You had to go out to do that. Softball, school, whatever, right? Arya doesn't say anything. She's just staring at John, holding her breath, knowing what he's about to say before he even says it. So that's it, right? You can't see your soulmate's face because you don't know how to feel safe in spaces where you should feel safe.
So? So? Like you both said, Sansa's not like that anymore, and I have never felt anything but love from you. Both of you, and Rob, and Rickon, and Mom, and Dad, and...
Because the negative can damage, Arya. It can shape in ways you don't understand. So yeah, maybe there are times you feel happy and safe here, sitting on this bed with me and Bran, but it doesn't trump feeling left out when you were younger. Lesser when you were a kid, Bran says sadly. Even I remember you like that, Arya. It's not who you are now, not by any means, but the pattern? The pattern is still there, John says. So what if Sansa feels bad about it? She and you will work it out. You're big girls now, and she's aware of her shit. But you can't see his face because you don't feel like you deserve to for some sick reason. Arya bites her lip and looks down at her hands, and a thought she hated thinking swept through her. He doesn't tell me about things unless I push him. He keeps me shut out. And more than anything else, John had said, that makes her want to cry. His face is still scratched out when Arya finally falls into an uneasy sleep, but his body relaxes slightly. Wondered if you were coming, he calls out to her, throwing a ball, a soft ball.
Sorry, I'm at home tonight, and I had a long conversation with my brothers, she says, her throat tight.
Gotcha, he replies, hefting the bat and lining up at the plate, shimmying his hips as he does. I thought maybe you'd gone off to sleep elsewhere, dream of something else.
Did you summon this one? She asks.
He'd once said that she was the one who brought them to the field in their dreams.
Yeah, he says, and she can hear the grin in his voice. You said you have a game tomorrow, and you always like pitching before a game.
She forces a smile and steps and throws, and he swings and misses.
True, she says.
The ball feeder appears next to her, and he doesn't bother going after the ball he just missed.
True. I won't go easy on you, she says.
Something in the back of her mind laughs bitterly, pushing away the thoughts from her conversation with Bran and John, so that her heart beats softball once more. Beats softball until she can figure this all out.
So you've been going easy on me, have you?
Yes. Bring it. And he lines up again, his hips shifting back and forth. She throws, he misses.
Where would we be if I hadn't had a game? She asks him.
What? She pitches another ball. It connects with a crack this time, and he takes off for first. You said you know I like pitching before I came, and I have a game tomorrow. But you came here first. You dreamed first.
It must be a subconscious thing, he calls unconcernedly from between second and third. She bites her lip and wishes he hadn't said that. Wishes he'd said something else.
So she says, yeah, but what if you could choose, right? Where would you take me?
He touches up at home and goes to collect the bat from where he had flung it after hitting the ball, entirely out of habit. I don't know, he says. Never thought about it, really.
Is there any place dear to your heart? Somewhere from when you were...
She cuts off, not sure if she should even mention his youth. Nah, he says. Places from when I was young were crap. Honestly, this stadium means more to me than anything else, because you're here.
Her throat closes and she swallows, trying to open it again.
He lines up, hips swiveling, and she pitches. You're the first person in my life who's made me feel valued, he says, as his bat strikes the leather of the ball, sending it sailing away. He doesn't run this time, and Arya doesn't even bother watching where the ball goes, because she's too busy staring at where his face should be. Please just appear, she begs her mind. Please, who are you?
I didn't really have that before you. So yeah, this place, this is a special place for me. You gonna throw that?
She does, and it whizzes past him, and the wire mesh behind home rings out with the sound of the ball. She's pitched a hitless six innings, and she is laughing because the chant of Wolves! Wolves! Ahoo! From the stands is so familiar, so like playing in her little league, so like home, that she finds it probably more invigorating than the other team, who hail from all across the kingdoms. They're up by 3 points, Liana having hit a 2-run home run, and Joy having hit Cynthia in. But halfway through the seventh, a girl named Jane Poole sends a ball deep into right and sprints past first to second, and there the stands go wild, and she sees Ravella and Sirio calling a timeout and coming to the mound.
You getting tired? Ravella asks. She's never been a gentle person, but when she looks Arya up and down, she feels warmth. You've been playing splendidly, Arya.
Arya shrugs her left shoulder and winces. It's getting sore. She needs to ice it. She looks out over the stands and sees John and Bran and Dad and Rickon and even Mom sitting just behind home plate. Dad's whispering something to Mom, probably explaining the timeout. And 4 rows behind them and a little bit to the left, she sees the baseball team, staring at her intently. Gendry's leaning forward, his hands resting on his knees, and she feels as though she can see the blue of his eyes, even though he's too far away for that.
I can finish the inning, she says. But yeah, I think I should stop.
You sure? Sirio asks her, and she nods.
It's one more out. I can do it.
He nods, and he and Ravella return to the bench, and Arya kicks the dirt underneath her feet and waits for the ump to give her the all clear. Then she swings the ball into motion. She sees the ball connect with the bat before she hears it, and her heart sinks. Poole is on third, sprinting around the bases, and Arya sees the ball bounce once on the ground before popping into Elia's mitt. She hears the cheer that means Poole has scored, and Arya kicks the dirt under her feet before she hears an, oh, run through the crowd. She jerks her head up and sees Liana and Alysanne walking towards the bench, Shireen trotting after them to pat Alysanne on the shoulder.
Tagged her out, winks Alysanne, as Arya cocks her head.
Bless you, Arya sighs, and she heads in and settles on the bench next to Weasel. She smiles at the girl, who smiles weakly back.
Nobody's perfect, she shrugs and winces.
Oh, fuck.
Need ice? Asks Weasel.
Could you?
Absolutely.
And the girl gets up to fetch some. Their 2-run lead is enough,
Elena shuts Winterfell out for the next two innings, and Shireen scores again, and they win 4-1 in an upset that none of them would have dreamed possible. And Arya's jumping up and down with the rest of the team, throwing herself into one-armed hugs and letting the girls muss her hair in appreciation. Because even if they lose the season, they've won Winterfell. If the field had been loud at Winterfell University, it is louder when she, Jon, Bran, Jojen, Rickon, Dad, and Gendry arrive at the Winter Stadium. The rumble of thousands of people getting ready to watch the Wolves-Dragons game. It's the third game of their series, and the Wolves are looking for a shutout. And Arya had spent most of the evening happily explaining to Gendry how and why the dragons would end up thoroughly pummeled when they took to the field that night. And what on earth makes you think I don't know all of these statistics already? He asks her as they settle into their seats at the end of the row. I do actually follow this game quite closely and everything. I'm just reminding you that you're stupid, Arya says lightly. I'm not, actually, Gendry says dryly. Why would you support the losing side then? She asks. Especially when they're new to the league. You do not owe the dragons your loyalty. It's the principle of the thing, Gendry says huffily. And do you honestly think that you berating me for it is going to make me change my mind? It should, she says. Yeah, well, too bad. If anything, it's just making me more stubbornly cling to my own opinions. So well done you, making me a more devout dragons fan. Arya gapes at him in mock horror, before sniffing and turning to Jon, who's sitting between her and Dad. I have nothing further to say to this lout, she says to Jon. Lout? Jon demands, raising his eyebrow at her. There's a twinkle in his eye, and she knows he's laughing at her. And it's all he can do to keep from mussing her hair, and she thinks about shoving him, except then Gendry would ask what Jon had done to merit a shove, and Gendry would know if she was lying. Lout. Trying out synonyms for idiot, are we? Gendry asks, laughing. I like a variation in my insults. I aim for a higher quality of needling. Jon sucks his lips between his teeth in an expression that says, I say nothing, but you know what I'm thinking. More clearly than if he'd shouted those words into the wind. Arya glares at him and faces forward, because right now she can't stand looking at either of them. Well, good on you. I confess myself impressed, Gendry snorts. Thank you, moron. She elbows him and winces again, because she'd forgotten how sore her shoulder was. And Gendry hisses, don't do that. You don't want to cause any damage. Keep it still. She wrinkles her nose at him, but doesn't respond, because a little girl from Winterfell is standing next to home plate and singing the national anthem, and the stadium rises to its feet. A moment later, the first pitch is thrown out, and the game begins. Though Arya hates to have to admit it, it's a good game. The dragons put up a fight before being soundly roasted by the wolves. If they hadn't swapped out Lannister for Meriwether, sighs Gendry in the back seat of the car as Dad gives him a ride back to the hotel. They couldn't have known that, though, Dad says. But, of course, once they did, that was it, wasn't it? Couldn't get back into the groove of it. Ripe for an upset they were, says Arya. Yeah, yeah. Newcomers. Shut up, I get it, all right? You know, it hurts you because it's true. It hurt less if you liked a good team. Tell me something, Gendry demands heatedly. If I switch teams to, say, the Wolves, what would you think of me then? Flaky? Disloyal? Possessing good taste, really, Arya says, and Gendry rolls his eyes. Look, my team's the Dragons, and maybe it'll cause me agony for the rest of my life, but it also might not. Deal with it. Looks like someone's defensive for liking a crap team, Arya guffaws, and Gendry faces the front of the car. Is she always this way, or is it just around me? he asks Dad. And Arya snorts.
I'd say she's often this way, but if she's always this way around you, then it's an abnormally high amount.
Great, Gendry mutters, and Arya reaches over and rubs his head the way John rubs hers sometimes. His hair is very wiry under her fingers and feels just the way it does in her dreams when she's curled around him.
Take heart. It means she likes you.
And Dad winks at her in the rearview mirror. She climbs into the front seat of the car once they've deposited Gendry and are driving back to the house.
He seems like a nice boy, Dad says,
and Arya shifts in her seat. Is Dad gonna do this too? God, she thought it was bad that Mom had brought up using protection. He is, she says. Dad, he's...
His game's tomorrow? Dad asks.
Arya blinks. Yeah, it is. Usually they're at the same time as the softball ones, but the Winterfell baseball team had an invitational. She smiles, almost without meaning to. When she'd been little, she'd gone to invitational games. She'd even played in some, because they didn't mind if girls played. They just wanted to get local kids outside and moving.
I might go watch, he says neutrally. He strikes me as a slugger, and I want to see it.
He is, Arya grins. There are recruiters looking at him to play in the big leagues right now. He's really good. Then she frowns. Well, I mean, that's what they say. I don't usually get to watch their games.
No?
She shakes her head. Sometimes I hear them, though, from the distance or whatever. Or if they're on the next field over, I can sometimes watch while we're on the bench, but not usually.
That seems like it would hardly foster camaraderie between teams, Dad says.
True, she agrees. But it just kind of worked out that way, though.
How did you become friends, then?
She looks out the window for a moment, at the dark shadow of the trees, the stars poking through the dark, breaking through the black and navy blue texture of the sky. How had she and Gendry become as close as they had anyway? We played catch, she says. Starting my freshman spring, he asked if I wanted to play catch, and I did. So we played. She heard her father make a slight clicking noise in the back of his throat.
Well, I'm glad you have a friend like him. He reminds me of Robert. And Robert's the best friend I ever had. I'd want you to have a friend like that.
She smiles and reaches over to pat his arm, wincing at the movement of her shoulder. Thanks, Dad. Her dreams are full of Gendry that night. Gendry, Gendry, Gendry. His lips on her neck, his hands at her breasts, in her hair, cupping her ass as he grinds up against her, grunting and moaning. And Arya? Arya's clutching at him, holding his face, kissing his lips, trailing her feet up and down his legs as he lies her down on a bed in a room that's almost a replica of her dorm room, and he fucks her, quick and hard and moaning her name and calling her beautiful and perfect and telling her how good she feels as he comes inside her. They lie like that for a while, Arya holding on to him, running her fingers through wiry hair, breathing in that pine scent of his deodorant, feeling as his cock goes limp inside her. And then he shifts, draws himself down the bed, and settles himself between her legs, hooking them over his shoulders as he licks at her cunt. His tongue is hot, his breath soft against her flesh, and she wonders if he tastes himself mixed up in there, or if her dreams aren't that detailed. Why would the Gendry she's dreamed up taste his cum mixed in her juices? She supposes he must, though. Supposes her brain has made good on living out her every fantasy. Because he pauses and looks up at her, blue eyes just above the thatch of dark hair between her legs, and he whispers,
"We taste good together."
And she sits up and kisses the top of his head, her lips in his wiry hair and his lips return to her. She falls back against the bed, reaching her hands up, finding the headboard, wishing her arm weren't sore from pitching, because it is, still. And that's ruining the dream, and gods, it's a good dream. Such a good dream. So good, and she wakes with a jolt, her cunt throbbing as if he'd actually been licking her, her shoulders twisted underneath her, and gods, how stupid could she be, rolling onto it in her sleep, right when she'd been about to come, too. She would have loved to have seen his face, to look down at him lazily as her heart stilled and her body felt warm, pulling him up her again so she could stick her tongue in his mouth and taste them both, too. She sits between Weasel and Shireen on the bleachers for the boys' game, her backpack at her feet, ready for her to get on the bus to the train station after the game has ended. She wishes she didn't have to leave so soon, even if she'll be back in a few short weeks once exams are over. She cheers and whistles along with the rest of the team as the boys take to the field, catcalling Lem because that's what you do, and chanting, "Jack be lucky, Jack be lucky," as Jack comes to the plate. The first half of the inning is over faster than Aria would have liked, but the second half is over even faster, with Kyle striking the first three out easily, as if he were going for a stroll along the beach. And when the second inning begins, Angie gets up on base, as does Luke, and then it's Gendry up at bat, and Aria feels herself smiling as he approaches the plate, knocking some dirt from his cleats and lifting his bat and lining up. Her heart stops. Not proverbially or euphemistically or whatever, it actually legitimately stops. She can't hear it or feel it for a second as she stares at him because she'd know that hip shift anywhere. She'd spent years making fun of it every night. Know it because you can't stare at somebody's face because it's all scratched out or blurry. You notice the way he moves his hips and gods, just how muscled his ass is. Oh, she'd kill him. She really would kill him. She's hot and cold and blushing and shivering all at once. And that's it. Of course it's him. How stupid could she be? They have the same deodorant and their voices sound the same. And them always sitting together on buses and trains. And of course he wouldn't care if she's having sex dreams about. He must think her a right idiot, not working it out. And, oh gods, she's going to be sick, isn't she? She doesn't even notice that when he swings, it doesn't make a crack like the usual crack. The "I'm sending this ball towards Astapor" crack. She doesn't even notice as Weasel ducks down or Shireen shrieks, "Look out!" Because she's staring at him and she's locked eyes with him and he's only 50 feet away. And she can see the way his expression seems to melt from an, "Ah, well," to a, "What's going on?" to a, "You've got it, haven't you?" to a, "Fuck." And she sees his lips move in slow motion as he says her name, and something collides hard with her head.